Well, good day, everyone. Welcome, and thank you for joining today's Teneo Insights webinar. I'm Kevin Kajiwara, co-president of Teneo Political Risk Advisory in New York. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it's fair to say that 2020 has been a year of unprecedented and concentrated challenges. But guess what? We are only about to hit the home stretch right now, and we still have at least one extremely significant event ahead of us. Tuesday night's presidential debate starkly displayed the clear picture and the clear choice that Americans have on who represents them in the White House. And that choice is about more than atmospherics, clearly. It will have an impact on America's role in the world and its approach to global affairs and leadership. But irrespective of what happens on November 3rd and its aftermath, corporate leaders will still be grappling with the ongoing impact of this year's perfect storm of events. The COVID-19 pandemic and the global recession that has resulted from it, where we've got more countries in recession than at any point since 1870, and one of only two post-war years with global contraction. The other year was 2009. That was only a 0.1% global contraction. This year, the OECD is forecasting 4.5%. And of the major countries, only China is going to grow this year. We've also had a social justice movement accompanied by the largest and most diverse protests in American history. And that's meeting up with the growing ESG movement and a reconsideration of the social responsibility of the corporation on the 50th anniversary of Milton Friedman's seminal article in the New York Times Magazine. And all of this in the shadow of the tectonic movements of the 21st century, the rise of China, technology's rapid disruption of not just the global workforce, but the very relationship between populations and the leaders and institutions of state, climate change, and of course, the role of the United States will play in supporting the system and it designed, built, and perpetuated since World War II. My guest today brings a unique perspective. He is a valued counsel and trusted advisor to CEOs and boards across the industrial spectrum and at the commanding heights of corporate America. Declan Kelly is the chairman and CEO and co-founder of Teneo. He started his career in his native Ireland as a journalist, but he soon started advising business leaders with a particular focus on their communications, which ultimately brought him to the United States, where he was a senior executive at FTI. But in 2009, he stepped away from the private sector and was appointed U.S. Economic Envoy for Northern Ireland by then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Then, along with Doug Band and Paul Keery, he founded Teneo in June 2011. Yes, that's right. 2021 will mark our 10th anniversary. And in that time, the firm has grown to over 800 people in some 20 offices on six continents. I am pleased to have him on our call today for the first time. As ever, please join our conversation at any time. You can submit your questions via the moderator chat button on your screen. So, Declan, thanks very much, and welcome to the call. I think, as I pointed out here, October 1st, really, I want to talk about the big picture ultimately here, but it's I think we have to note that today's October the 1st. It's the start of the fourth quarter. 2020, as I said, has been an extraordinary year, but there's a lot to come. So, in your discussions with CEOs and your peers, you know, what is corporate leadership out there anticipating, and what are you seeing as we head into the end of this year and as they prepare for 2021, regardless of the election outcome? I don't think it's lost on any of us this week, as a lot of the a lot of the fiscal stimulus and the policies around that are starting to expire. We're seeing a wave of corporate announcements on layoffs, particularly in the travel and leisure industry, but even in other industries such as banking. So what are you seeing out there?
Thanks very much, Kevin, and great to be with everybody today. Thanks for taking the time to dial in. We thought it would be important to have this discussion, I guess, because we're working with CEOs and senior leaders of many of the world's largest companies right now, and it is a period of unprecedented change. And we've moved into a different phase since March through the rest of the year to now a place where people are beginning to really understand the long-term consequences of what we've been through and what we're going through right now. I think one of the things that's really resonating with me all the way through this is the adaptability of the human condition and how we as people have managed to adapt to what has been an extraordinary environment for everybody. And I think that's something I'll weave through many of the discussion items we're having today. 2020 is quite simply the year the world was turned upside down. There's been lots of talk about, you know, various other things that have happened in the past that have been, you know, major events in history that have turned things, you know, on their head. But I don't think there's ever been anything like this in terms of the scale, the breadth, the depth, the consequence, the far-reaching potential consequence, and the speed with which it happened. The volatility and uncertainty in the external environment has never been greater. The era of chaos and volatility is far from over. I think in that context, stepping away from whether or not we get a vaccine, you know, I think we're at the end of the beginning of a period of extreme volatility that is going to go on for a very long time for a variety of reasons, some of which you enunciated earlier, and some of which are yet to occur. I think all the CEOs that we're working with are fully in realization mode in terms of knowing that they have to be prepared for a disruption to continue for years to come. There's a lot of talk about the new normal, and you know, we really think that is the wrong way to think about this. Some things will go back to how they were. Some things will evolve predictably, but the pandemic itself is a discontinuity. It's a reset, it's a reboot moment, and many things will not look like anything that like they did before. You know, we in Teneo like to call it the new different, not the new normal. It's all interlinked, all intertwined, and we think there are three irreversible shifts underway. COVID clearly is one, climate is another, and connectivity is the third in areas such as the Internet of Things and social media and smartphones, etc. You know, it's going to change everything around how people live, how businesses work and operate, how society runs completely. The next decade will be a period of unprecedented change. So what does that really mean? I mean, I spend my days on the phone or on videos with literally one CEO after another across multiple industries. And while these industries and sectors are all different, there are several themes that are common to them all. You know, think about this as a backdrop, for example, for being a CEO today. It's the worst global recession since World War II. The first time, the first recession in my lifetime, and I'm 52, in emerging markets and developing economies. China will grow this year. No Western economy will grow whatsoever. Small business is suffering catastrophic impact. Whole sectors are tanking, you know, restaurants, retail, tourism, auto supplies, etc. I was watching CNBC this morning, and while I was watching it over 15 minutes, 50,000 job cuts were announced on the screen in the space of 15 minutes. There's been a broad-based failure of international institutions in their ability to respond collectively and at pace. There's the rising US-China tension. There's nationalism and regional tension. Blocks are being formed that never existed before. We have failed states around the world that are truly failed. And we have pandemic poverty, which is what my old friend Don Keogh used to call the consequences of the consequences, meaning that we haven't yet even seen the beginning of what the full extreme of the poverty will be around the world as a consequence of this, including in our own country here in the United States, I'm sad to say. So on a more granular level, I think the most recent earnings cycle was unlike any most CEOs have ever seen. You know, the pandemic has turned the market on its head, and the traditional barometers for measuring business cycles are unclear. Corporations, at last count that Teneo has put on it, have already issued a record $2.7 trillion of debt. Companies are taking advance of dirt cheap borrowing to refinance expensive debt and build up cash, but they're also at the same time under less pressure to repair balance sheets because of how quickly central banks are easing monetary policy. So, you know, global shares are trading at around 20 times this coming year's earnings. Blank check firms, SPACs as they're called, have raised record amounts for acquisitions this year. That's a completely new phenomenon. So, you know, overall, U.S. job growth has been slowing, and, you know, we're dealing with a potential resurgence of the virus in the fall, as we see all over the United States and around the world. So when you look at all of these things, it means that investors and analysts are going to continue requiring in this coming quarter and beyond a more granular level of detail than we've ever seen before. The questions that are asked on the conference calls are deeper, more searching, and more in the weeds than has ever been necessary. Companies are changing their approach to business in a fundamental way. Working reality is now new to everybody, but it's in a sense we all feel like we've been living with it now forever. Remote working, digital transformation, examining or re-examining risk and risk management. And I think one thing that is often forgotten is, you know, the role of the corporation as a global citizen is being completely redefined. And the role of the CEO as a leader of people is being completely redefined. So it kind of doubles the challenge of the job that that person has to do. And I also think that going forward, corporate purpose will no longer be a buzzword. It'll be a value enhancer. And in fact, I think it already is. So, you know, a couple of final points on this question. You know, I think the second wave of the virus, which is upon us, is obviously bringing more uncertainty. You know, sometimes I think of it with a little bit of incredulity because, you know, we've known this was coming for some time, but we don't seem necessarily prepared any more than we were before, perhaps a little bit better, but not much. And, you know, people are also dealing with what we're calling COVID fatigue. You know, they're not taking the kind of precautions they were taking during the height of the pandemic when it first started. And that in and of itself is worrying. So when you look at all of these things, and then Kevin, you mentioned the debate, you know, which was, you know, in my view, embarrassing on many levels. You know, that is also creating further uncertainty for CEOs and companies all over the United States, and in fact, all over the world, because everybody has to prepare for both outcomes. Everyone's preparing for perhaps a drawn out legal process. Everyone's preparing for perhaps lengthy engagement with not a real clear winner in sight, potentially. And then in the backdrop, you have the entire US-China situation going on and whether or not that gets escalated during this entire period or not. So when you look at all of this stuff together, you know, I don't want to be Debbie Downer on the call, and I'm certainly working very closely with everyone I can to try and help companies navigate through this period. But I think it would be dishonest of me to say that I think the next 3 to 6 months are going to continue to say anything other than the next 6 months are going to be a period of continued uncertainty, and a lot of things still have to shake out here economically, and most of them are not going to be good.
Well, you've just teed up you know, the rest of this conversation in a sense there, and I want to dive into some of what you have just brought up. And so clearly we're in for further volatility and uncertainty, as you clearly stated. But before we dive into some of the details, I want to look back to maybe look forward in a sense, because, you know, you have been advising a lot of these CEOs for years ahead of the pandemic. In fact, many of them throughout their executive careers. But when you look back over the course of this year, from the onset of the pandemic to the full impact of it, to the killing of George Floyd and the ensuing racial and social justice movement, the economic fallout that you've just talked about in the market volatility, what do you think are the lessons learned? What's worked and what's not? And I'm specifically talking about corporate America right now, obviously, but, you know, what lessons can we take away from this? I mean, obviously 2020, as we both pointed out here, in totality is a bit of a black swan event. Nobody could have predicted that all of these things would happen at the same time in the same year. But each component crisis that you just talked about was predictable and therefore could have been prepared for. How well prepared was corporate America? And what about government relations? Not as opposed to pushing a corporate agenda, you know, how much better could corporate government relations be to both respond to and prepare for these types of crises?
Yeah, so there's a lot in that question. I'll try and address it as much as I can. you know, the Overton window is a political concept that is known to many of you, I'm sure. And it's known as the window of discourse, and it was designed many years ago. And it basically describes the range of ideas the public is willing to consider and accept at any given time. And it shifts over time, but it's been remarkably resilient in its ability to sort of frame how discourse happens. And, you know, what's really interesting is that the CEOs all over the world, especially in corporate America, are seeing the Overton window shifting on shareholder value after 50 years, the first time, and purpose. So business models that have worked for decades are under extreme threat. New ways of working are being debated, whether they be virtual or remote or distributed or what have you. There is a very strong and marked and permanent, in my view, shift in emotional leadership. Empathy is a key CEO attribute today. And if you don't have it and don't show it, you're going to struggle to survive if you're in the C-suite. You know, I think there's been some clear winners and clear losers during the time period. Some of this was due to deliberate actions and choices that were taken. Some of it was because you were in a certain industry or whatever, or certain lines of business, and just having to deal with the situation the best you could. But, you know, I do think that there have been winners and losers, and we all know who they are. I think the virus has exacerbated and speeded up the struggles that some industries were already experiencing, I guess. And so for some companies, it was the inevitable just happening more quickly than they or anyone had really anticipated. I think it's also exposed companies that had a lot of debt on their balance sheets already and not a ton of free cash. They had outdated operating models, weak CSR policies, et cetera. And, you know, I think a key point here is, and it's not often talked about, but I think it will be over time. It's become very clear to me that there's now an expectation on CEOs and corporations to play a major role in helping to solve the wider problems that this pandemic has exposed, because what it shows is that federal government, regardless of who runs it, is not capable of dealing with all of these things at any one time. You know, the government's ability to respond to this on many levels has been tsunamied by the scale of what's happened. And by that, I mean the institution of federal government, not any political statement as to who runs it or otherwise. So, you know, having said all of that, I give a lot of credit to a lot of companies and CEOs. Many of them, in fact, most of them have really stepped up, even if the exact expectations were kind of undefined for them. There have been many that have shown incredible strength and resilience and courage doing things that they'd never have thought they had to do before. There have been multiple instances of CEOs putting their companies second and putting their people first, which I think is really admirable, and I think has really helped you know, corporate America get through what it had to get through in the most acute period at the height of the pandemic in the first wave. The speed with which businesses are adapting their business models in most instances is really impressive and remarkable. And also the speed with which those who receive their services is similarly adapting really quickly. So, you know, I also really am impressed and grateful for so many people that I work with that have taken strong stands on social issues that they traditionally didn't need to get involved with in the same way. So, you know, this has been a horrible time period, massive loss of human life, great tragedy, social unrest, economic disparity. And, you know, I think many companies have been sort of inspired, if you will, to adapt and change for the better. And so, while I started out this conversation, you know, painting a pretty bleak picture in the short term as to what I think we're going to have to deal with, I am also greatly encouraged and thrilled, I have to say, by how most companies have stepped up to respond to this and, you know, what they're trying to do in order to make society a more equitable one for everybody and to change for the better. So, it isn't all doom and gloom. You know, we will come out of this. We will persevere. We will survive. We will get stronger and better over time. And you know, I do think the last several months since March have shown tremendous resiliency amongst not only the American people but also the people who run our companies. And you know, we're tremendously proud to be associated with them and helping them do that every day.
So, Declan, let me push you on that just a little bit. You've laid out a lot of the positive and inspirational responses, but what when you look across the spectrum at these responses, the CEO responses, talk a little bit about the negative element here. And I don't want to dwell on what has happened, but I guess it's more an emphasis on what concerns you going forward. You know, not just, you know, a lot of these people and their own capacity to deal with crisis, and certainly multiple crises, but more about the institutional constraints on them as well to take action. What concerns you as you look forward to all of that uncertainty that we've still got in front of us?
You know, that's a pretty easy question to answer in one way, because I have an almost a one size fits all answer, because, you know, let me step back and say, first of all, you know, how CEOs and leaders navigate through challenging times are really the defining moments of their career. So when you go back and look at the history of great leaders, whether it be in business or in politics or whatever, it's always, you know, the things we recall the most are the way they responded at times of great crisis. And, you know, we've lived through great crisis in this country. I mean, just think about the children of 9/11 are about to vote for the first time, which to me is astonishing, because it feels like only yesterday that it happened. But, you know, there are many CEOs out there that have absolutely stepped into the leadership void that has existed. And, you know, I do think that that is a predominant feature of American business. I think the American psyche, the American public, the resilience that I spoke about at the beginning is extraordinary. Having said all of that, and to get to your question, you know, there is definitely a need for many companies to continue pivoting to rethink their business strategy, but also sort of employee health and safety. And by that, I don't mean physical safety in operating or manufacturing. I mean mental health. You know, the impact of COVID on corporations is immense. We won't know for years, really, what the impact has been. You know, Dr. Kerry Sulkowitz, who is one of our senior advisors at Teneo, extraordinary man, you know, put it best in his description. He calls it strain trauma. And, you know, think of a rope. And if you put tension on both sides of the rope, both ends of the rope is under stress. And at some point, if the stress is long enough and hard enough, the rope will eventually break. But what you don't see before the breakage is the micro tears that take place in the rope. And, you know, I think it's really important for leaders to be very cognizant of the effects of the strain trauma in their organizations. And, you know, I believe that leaders, their behavior, their personalities, their values have the single greatest impact on the culture of any organization. At the end of the day, you know, people look to the person at the top or the persons at the top, and they mirror and measure themselves off the way that person responds to the circumstances in which they find themselves. And, you know, that's certainly not the only influence on culture, but by far the biggest one in my view. So people are looking to all the CEOs for comfort, for truth, for guidance during these ambiguous times. And the people who don't provide that will face challenges with the organization they lead. And you also need to show the human side of who you are when you run the business. As you know, Kevin, in the way we dealt with it every week in Teneo was, you know, weekly videos and, you know, all the different things that we did as an organization to try and make sure that we kept our 835 people buoyed up all over the world. And on a relative basis, we're a small company. But, you know, at the end of the day, it makes it 50 times harder if you happen to have 50,000 people. So you have to be extremely thoughtful. And the key question going forward, I think, is how CEOs will evolve as leaders, given that increased responsibility they have beyond simply running a business. Those who grab that nettle and take it seriously, I think, will prosper. Those that don't, I think, will gradually look completely out of kilter with everybody else.
I want to pivot now to something that has, I think nobody anticipated was going to necessarily hit while they were having to deal with the pandemic. But it required an absolutely, thoughtful and fast response, which was that companies had to respond very quickly to the murder of George Floyd and the ensuing Black Lives Matter movement. First, in how they communicated, obviously. Second, in the pledges that they made to take action, and now actually executing on those pledges amidst all of the other things that everybody's dealing with that you've just outlined. So how do you see that playing out, and how are companies going to deal going forward with future social justice issues that will certainly arise?
Yeah. I think there's a couple of things I sort of want to say about this whole this topic. And I think I'd like to sort of talk about two or three different things at the same time and maybe grab different points. So I know we want to get some questions, but let's talk for a moment about the economy and where things stand with regard to what's happening in the current cycle and what the impact is generally on the morale of the country. And then we can pivot to sort of the social justice issues and, the things that we want to talk about there. In a certain sense, I feel like we're living in a false economy at the moment, because I think there's a significant disconnect between public equity markets and where the stock market is and where the underlying reality of the economy is. And, I've seen this debate played out in front of me many times in the last 2 months, where different people have different views and they feel like the stock market is going to continue to be the way it is. And, it doesn't really matter what people say. I mean, I don't agree with that. I think there is an underlying problem in the sense that the amount of debt that exists in the marketplace and the amount of cash that has been pumped into the marketplace by the Federal Reserve, which I think was absolutely necessary, by the way, is eventually going to have to be paid for. And we handle more earnings calls than any other company in the world by a large magnitude. And, I do think that, at the end of the day, we're heading into a period here where after the election is over and we start facing into 2021, we're going to see that, some of these debts have to be paid. Money is not free. And the underlying sort of economic malaise that may result from this, with all of these various different jobs that are being cut and so on, everything I talked about earlier, I think that is a worry. And I think it does have social consequences in terms of, whether or not people are able to have enough money to live and be happy and to survive. And if they don't, it's going to have a consequential knock on in the whole area of safety and, society at large. I also think, one other point I just want to make in case I forget is, I hear a lot of people talking about, how we could become like Japan, in the early 1990s. After their economic crash, many companies were seen as a contributor to their stagnation because they became zombie companies that sort of crawled along basically in sort of junk territory. But they would otherwise have gone bankrupt if they hadn't been able to borrow money at very low rates. And, we have extraordinarily low rates here in this country at the moment. If you take into account where they are right now, when you take into account inflation, they're negative, basically. So when you look at all of that, there isn't really a lot more levers that the Federal Reserve can pull other than continue to put money available into the economy. So when you look at all of these different things, and then you pivot to the second part of the question around, social justice. You can see there are many contributing factors to people being unhappy in this country. And social justice is prime among them. And 15 to 26 million people in the U.S. participated in the racial justice movement in these last few months. And that I think you referred to this at the beginning, that makes the recent protest the largest movement in the country's history. And the anger that's there, all of which is entirely justified in my view, is here to stay until these matters are resolved. And in Teneo, we've done an awful lot of things to try and bring forward our views to our clients and to anybody else who cares to listen as to what we think corporations need to do in order to address this. You know, I agree with our senior advisor, Ursula Burns, somebody that I admire greatly, who believes that, you know, this is actually an incredibly important and powerful moment for companies to be a very positive force for change, and that CEOs want to help and want to try and genuinely want to make a difference here. But when you put all of these two things together, where, you know, you look at the income inequality that exists, in especially in socioeconomic groupings and areas around the country, and then you align that with the clear social injustice that's going on and has been going on for years in the United States, you know, it really is something that has to stop. And if it doesn't stop, the consequences are going to be even more serious. But I feel greatly encouraged by the response of most of the companies that I see out there at the moment in terms of their seriousness to take this on and deal with it. I do think, however, the next 6 to 9 to 12 months are critically important in making sure that we don't just talk about it, we do something about it. And, you know, I'm happy to expand on that further if you want, because we've, as you know, undertaken a number of initiatives ourselves to try and be helpful.
Yeah, I do want to pick up on that and get very practical here for a moment. You brought up Ursula Burns. She's obviously very familiar to everybody who ever joins this call. She's one of the most popular guests on this call, and she's been very gracious with her time. Her most recent visit with us was to talk about the Board Diversity Action Alliance, which you founded along with her, Gabrielle Sulzberger, the Ford Foundation, and the Executive Leadership Council. Maybe you can talk a little bit, but this is an actual, you know, sort of practical and accountable initiative. So talk about our participation there and what you hope to achieve with it.
Yeah, just very quickly, you know, Ursula and Gabrielle and Ford Foundation, the ELC, and ourselves basically came together to form the BDAA, which is the Board Diversity Action Alliance. And, you know, put simply, it's a business-led initiative really taking action to increase the representation of racially and ethnically diverse directors on corporate boards of directors, beginning with Black directors. And, you know, again, I'm greatly encouraged by the response we've had, but also greatly encouraged by the seriousness with which, you know, all the clients we work with, at least, and many others that we know of, are taking this issue. And again, we're just not going to leave anything to chance. It has to happen. It has to be sustainable. It has to be here forever. And it can't just be a token gesture where people tick a box and feel like it's a good thing to do and so on. This has to become systemically relevant, and it has to become institutionalized, and it has to become normal. And Ursula deserves most of the credit because she came up with the idea after the murder of George Floyd, and she felt it was a really good, you know, opportunity to seize upon the desire for companies to do something about this. And she gave us a call, and the initiative led by my colleague Rudina Russell, who's done an amazing job, you know, meant that we got in and got involved, and we're very happy to help out. And so, you know, let's just look at some of the stats for a second. You know, 37% of the S&P 500 did not have any Black directors on their board of directors. If you look at the Harvard Law School's Forum on Corporate Governance, in 2019, only 10% of the Russell 3000 Index board of directors belonged to an African minority group. So by joining the alliance, signatories voluntarily commit to supporting a concerted enterprise transformation to diversity and to all the things that that entails, integrating talent, accountability, and engagement. And, you know, specifically, there are three things that we are asking companies to do. Increase the number of Black directors on the board of directors to one or more, disclosing of the self-identified race and ethnicity of directors on corporate boards, and then reporting on diversity, equity, and inclusion measures on an annual basis going forward. And there are other initiatives out there like the Board Challenge, which is great, by the way, and I think the more of these, the merrier, because they're all aimed at doing the same thing. But I think in partnership with Ursula and the team and all of our partners, we're going to be able to see greater efforts towards Black representation in addition to longer term diversity programs that lead to progression and maturing of corporate boardrooms and companies in the long term, Kevin.
Well, and that dovetails into the broader point or the broader initiative of ESG. And we've been focusing a lot in recent calls on the S element here, but how do you see both the short-term and long-term development of ESG focus, you know, especially in an environment with, depressed consumer demand, further pressure on profits, and economic uncertainty, to be able to also focus on these initiatives and goals?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting because when I was in Davos earlier this year, this was the topic du jour, and everybody was talking about it. It had been building up to this moment. The previous year in Davos was similar, but there was a much greater emphasis this year, I think, led by, you know, the fact that, you know, Larry Fink had written his famous letter, and, you know, the Business Roundtable had had over 180 public company CEOs sign the corporate purpose statement. And then COVID happened, and people stopped talking about it for a period, which is understandable, because people were fighting for their lives literally and metaphorically. But I would say it's been delayed but not denied, and certainly is going to be a real feature of the upcoming proxy season, and I think for many, many more years to come. You know, I think CEOs are increasingly expected to not only manage the interests of all stakeholders, but to articulate their company's values and really provide, you know, vocal leadership on issues affecting society. So I really think that this is something that's here to stay. I think it's really important. I think, basically, if I can put it simply, I think the crisis that we faced in 2020 will not only result in a continuance of the stakeholder capitalism movement, I actually think it'll accelerate in 2021. So I guess that's my short answer. There's a lot of different data points I can point to that will underpin that, but I don't think you would find a CEO out there who would disagree with that statement.
I know you have a 9:15 hard start, so we have just about 5 minutes left. So I want to ask just a couple questions, and hopefully we can have you back, because I do want to at some point hear your thoughts on some of the really big moving issues that you talked about earlier on technological disruption, on the rise of China, and how corporations are going to have to deal with that. But to just sort of keep it on what we've been discussing today, I think in some ways, you know, we've been lucky that that this crisis hit in 2020 by everyone being at home. You know, we and in most cases, our families have been able to continue to function primarily thanks to technology. But I know that a lot of people are longing to get back to the office, if only for the change of scenery or for the esprit de corps, that that belief in mission, and just that more fertile creativity that comes from overt collaboration that, frankly, only in-person environments can promote. I went back to our office on Tuesday for the very first time, and I have to say it was kind of amazing the job that's been done by our colleagues to promote a very safe workplace. It's probably the safest place in New York City, from what I could tell. But in any event, how much of these changes? You know, you talked about the adaptability of the human condition. We all shifted on a dime when we had to, when the country closed down. But clearly, some of the cracks in that are starting to emerge. What do you think is going to wind up being permanent out of all of this, going forward as we come out from under the pandemic and the recession?
Yeah, I mean, I could talk about this until the cows come home, but I'll try and maybe squeeze one more question in after this. I think the short answer is, I think some of them are permanent, some of them are not. And, you know, I think we're going to have a mixture of at-home working, virtual work, so that people are able to do it from wherever they are, plus the reality of people wanting to come back to work, because we're all ultimately social animals. I do think that several factors in the environment of how we work have changed forever. I think it's extraordinary to see that it's happened in the space of 7 or 8 months. I think we have not just replaced ways of working, we have skipped entire potential generations of types of work that we would otherwise have undertaken to get to this point. And it's a bit like, you know, people once were afraid to give someone their credit card number because they were afraid of fraud and corporate fraud. And now, you know, people give their credit card number and give it over the phone and do it on the internet and do everything and don't even think about it. In the same way here, you know, the idea and the concept that you have to be physically in front of your client or your partner or your supply chain person or whoever you do business with the exception of any consumer facing businesses like food and beverage or so forth, you know, that's gone out the window. So I think the speed with which people will work will change, become a lot faster. I think we all get a lot more done in a day than we used to, which is quite extraordinary given that we're not leaving our desks. And, you know, I think the speed with which we work will continue to be faster. The amount with which we travel to do that work is likely to be less. But I do think eventually we'll want to get back into the collaborative work environment where people want to be in a room together working. So I just think we're going to have a lot more flexibility, but I don't necessarily think that, you know, we're all going to stay working from home and we're looking at, you know, thousands upon thousands of empty office buildings all over every city. I just don't see that happening.
I want to end, you know, sort of with where we began. You know, you made the point that crisis defines leadership and defines leaders, both politically and in business. But as you've observed, you know, those you advise, your peers, what do you think truly makes a great leader? I mean, has the definition of that changed recently, given the all of these new requirements that you've touched upon that are now been thrust upon leaders?
Yeah, in some respects, it's the same as it always has been. And in some respects, it's not. So I'll sort of, I guess I would make 4 points. If I can just remember them all. So the first is, I think, you know, agility and determination and willingness to change one's own business, they've always been qualities that distinguish great leaders, right, ever before the pandemic happened. But they're a must-have now if you want to run a successful business. So if you're not willing to change and do it quickly and take risk and not look for every last detail to be put in front of you before you make the decision, then you're going to suffer and you're probably going to be completely overtaken by your competition. The second is, you know, being able to communicate in a clear, calm, and concise way is really paramount, especially in these times. It seems like a simple thing, but I really don't think it is. I think it's really important. People are feeling really isolated, lonely, and unsure. They crave stability. That's what the human condition needs most of all. And they need to hear there's a plan, and they want to know what's going on. So, over communicating is better than under communicating, and I think we've all seen that that's the case. Third thing I think is it's really important to be humble and show empathy and listen and learn. Don't try to solve and say you understand the issues at hand until you go out and speak to your employees and to the people that are being hurt or affected most directly. You know, part of the skill of leadership is, you know, you may have a hunch as to what you think is the right thing to do. And in many cases in the past, we may have just gone ahead and done it. But unless you're willing to take input in today's world in a way that's really all embracing, I actually think that it's setting you back as a leader, and I don't think it resonates with your employees. And then the last thing is the obvious one, which is leading by example, you know, setting the right example in your industry, the business world, et cetera, and being vocal about the actions being taken, like we have been on the social justice initiative because we care so deeply about it and have been, you know, a consistent supporter of it for many years. So these things matter. It'll put the right kind of pressure on others to do the same. And we all do this together. I think we can get there. But this really is a time where leadership is being tested. And we're going to find out, you know, in the not too distant future, who the winners and the losers were. And I think those four areas will be a part of the reason you either win or you lose, depending on which bucket you fall into.
Well, I know you have to run. There's a lot more that we could discuss, and hopefully we'll have the opportunity to do so. And from the sound of it, there's going to be plenty of time to do so. So with that, I want to thank you, Declan, for joining us today. And I want to thank all of our audience for joining, as you always do. We very much appreciate it. If there are follow-up questions or comments that you'd like, please don't hesitate to reach out to your Teneo contacts or to us at TeneoInsights@Teneo.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the next Teneo Insights call. Thanks for joining. Have a good day and have a good weekend. Thanks, Declan.